Welcome to the Voices of Women in Debtors Anonymous webinar. Okay, and we're going to get started. We're going to start with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity.
Grant me serenity.
To accept the things
I cannot change.
I cannot change. The courage
to change the things I can.
I can.
And
wisdom to know the difference.
So I'd like to just briefly introduce myself and my co-facilitators. My name is Kathy. I'm a compulsive debtor. My home group is Radical Clarity. And my solvency date is June 28th, 2021. Ellen, my co-facilitator, is a member of the Serenity First Group and came into Debtors Anonymous in 1987. The other person who worked very diligently on this webinar is Jennifer A., who sadly could not be here today due to a family emergency. Jennifer's home group is Earn It, Grow It, and came into Debtors Anonymous in 2017. We are general service representatives, and we are all members of the Underrepresented and Underserved Outreach Community Committee. So, excuse me. In DA, our purpose is threefold: to stop incurring unsecured debt, to share our experience with the newcomer, and to reach out to other debtors. Inclusivity statement. Whatever your story, you are welcome in Debtors Anonymous. In DA, we celebrate the rich, diverse experiences of people of all identities. We embrace members of any race, ethnicity, nationality, gender, sexual orientation, age, physical or mental ability, socioeconomic status, religious, spiritual, or philosophical expression, or any other trait. Our various experiences benefit our recovery, so we encourage all members to value differences and actively participate in making DA an inclusive fellowship. Together, we create accessible and welcoming spaces for anyone with the desire to stop incurring unsecured debt so that we may all recover one day at a time. The purpose of today's webinar: this webinar is being held to bring awareness to the proposed literature motion, Voices of Women in Debtors Anonymous, and to provide an opportunity for members to hear directly from women in DA whose experiences may not yet be fully reflected in our conference-approved literature. An early motion has been submitted to the World Service Conference for approval of a concept for a pamphlet on Voices of Women in DA. This webinar introduces the voices that might be reflected in such a pamphlet. And we are going to share the motion for just a moment. I will read the motion that will be on the floor at the World Service Conference that's coming up in August 6th. The World Service Literature Committee moves that the conference approve a concept for a new literature project, The Voices of Women in Debtors Anonymous. Thank you, Ellen. Four speakers will share their stories of debting and recovery through the lens of different lived experiences. Being an older woman, being a Black woman, being a woman who has worked in the sex field, and being a gender non-conforming woman. Through honesty, vulnerability, and recovery, this webinar seeks to deepen understanding of how identity, culture, social expectations, invisibility, and financial pressures can intersect with compulsive debting. Using the DA tool of awareness, we are reminded that awareness helps us avoid vagueness and denial by listening openly and compassionately to diverse voices within DA. We strengthen our ability to carry the message to all who still suffer and reinforce the spiritual principles of unity, inclusivity, and identification. So we have our speakers. Our first speaker actually will be a recorded experience, strength, and hope message. Kim H. Kim H. is out of the country at the moment. Kim's home groups are ODAT, One Day at a Time, Black in DA Workshop, and Living Your Priorities. Kim came into DA in August of 2000 and has been solvent since 2016. So we are going to show Kim's picture on the screen, and then we are going to play her audio. And the audio is about 10 minutes and 31 seconds.
My name is Kim, and I am most definitely a grateful
member. Can you hear?
Yes.
Anonymous. I have a sponsor who tells me to say that I am loved and accepted as I am before I share in any meeting. And I have another sponsor who asked step five, suggested that I also say that I make mistakes. And it's okay, because I'm human, and that's how I learn, and that is how I grow. And both of them say I have to say she said to say it. So I'm loved and accepted as I am, and I make mistakes, and it's okay, because I'm human, and I learn, and that's how I grow. The things that I've gotten from DA that are most valuable to me are honesty and clarity. Honesty about myself and the need for a higher power to help me live a life worth living, and clarity around my true needs and my resources. Step one showed me my inability to be true to myself. The mistaken beliefs about my life as a Black woman in the United States of America. I couldn't balance a checkbook, return a library book on time, keep from overdrawing my checking account, or live within my means. I was impulsive and vague. I front-loaded my spending and made commitments to pay for things I wanted based on income I expected to have next week or next month, rather than money and resources and energy I had at the time. I based my decisions on what I thought others were doing rather than my own due diligence, research, and my own best interests. So, if my coworker bought a Toyota, I bought a Toyota. If she upgraded to a Subaru, I bought a Subaru. Must have color black, because doctors had to look professional. Would the monthly payment make me cash poor? I didn't know. I hadn't calculated in my needs, like cost of dental work or emergency expenses, like replacing a busted tire or a burnout transmission. I didn't factor in the cost of expected recurrent expenses, like tabs and license or cleaning, so everything was an emergency. When the monthly payment on a lease loan seemed within the range I thought I could afford, I didn't think about the length of the contract or the payout at the end or how I would manage that. And what you do in one area, you do in all. So I often chose expensive activities my daughter's friends were having, and then found myself struggling to make ends meet. It's hard for me to make ends meet when I am vague about the ends. I grew up in a family where alcohol was the first and most important category in the parental spending plan. In DA, spiritual is the first category on the DA number spending plan for a reason. Reorienting from a victim mindset of robbing Peter to pay Paul, buying things and returning them after use, lying on anything at any time, and blaming my financial problems on loan sharks, pawnbrokers, and selfish family and friends has been a long journey. And I no longer seek to get over on someone because I have been oppressed. I have been oppressed. But I can tell the difference between the effects of systemic racism, redlining, displacement, violent reaction to appropriate amassing of wealth and resources, and the racist refusal of job advancement and housing and union membership. I can tell the difference between that and the physical, emotional, and psychological damage and trauma that resulted from living in such a sick system. The hunting of my great-grandfather and his friends like animals that is documented in the congressional record of the Reconstruction. The flight of his grandson, my father's father, from South Carolina to New York City in the greatest migration in the history of the country. Just because he was also targeted for death for economic success, or the PTSD of my own father, who was at risk in France during World War II from the white American soldiers as he was from the Nazis. Those things are written in my epigenetic code. In DA, I'm learning how to rewire my brain on a spiritual plane. Today, I live in unity, choosing to spend time and energy on those with whom I have a demonstrated common welfare, tradition one. I am learning to spend emotional and physical energy in places where I have both authority to make a decision and means to follow through, rather than responsibility and no means, concept one. In step two, I got hope coming into DA that my life could be different. I could get out of debt, stay out of debt, and live prosperously. At first, I just wanted to be able to pick up the phone without a haranguing credit tip calling me and telling me I was late and slow. I just wanted to open my mail without dread. I wanted to be able to take a vacation or a sabbatical and still have money to live on when I returned and pay for my disabled daughter's medical and educational expenses. In step three, I made a decision to trust DA in the process. For me, the PRG team and my sponsor were a higher power. Only recently have I come to work the steps with a sponsor who understands my low self-esteem and impulsivity enough to patiently and kindly help me to unravel my twisted wiring of living as a Black woman in a patriarchal, anti-Black society enough to get past the real victimization of being told I couldn't rent an apartment because I was Black, or would have to open my backpack for inspection because I was Black, or would have a 10-year shorter life expectancy and a higher risk of mortality when pregnant because of my zip code and my race. Then step four, I see these things are all real and have affected my security, my finances, my ambitions, my personal relations, and my self-esteem. I also saw that pride and self-pity were optional, and rebellion born of resentment that dogged my every step could keep me from picking up the spiritual toolkit and living a life that makes my heart sing. I stopped taking things that weren't mine, became willing to live differently, offered to repay where I had stolen or lied, and to make a spending plan that took into account my needs for housing, food, medical care, and separated my responsibilities from those of people who are capable of caring for their own selves. I no longer fund addictive behaviors in others or myself, and consequently, I have a prudent reserve, emotional equanimity, an emergency fund, and savings for projects and whims. What looked like a straitjacket now feels like a warm bath and a massage. I'm learning to discern what is mine and what is an outside issue, best left to loving God and another person. I can pause, ask for help, and wait 72 hours before making a large expenditure. And I can call my PRG team for suggestions and advice. I've been given the ability to plan for my future in retirement, which I am now retired, and to envision goals and reach them one step at a time, to rely on the program and higher power rather than a man for my sense of identity, comfort, and ease, and to be willing to be wrong and learn or clear and stand on spiritual principles. I've become debt-free in DA. I have adequate resources I can share with others, and now I'm working on my time remaining in this body by developing a time plan. This feels like pulling teeth, just as getting used to a money plan did back in the day. I remember when I took my fear of sending my daughter to college without incurring new debt to my home group and my PRG team, and how well that worked out once I asked for help to see things clearly and got it. I'm still in contact with members I knew over 25 years ago, and they are trusted friends. I have new associations in Black and DA here in Ghana. I understand my challenges, and my friends encourage me and believe me when I share how being Black affects my opportunities and help me to surmount obstacles using the three legacies of the program to discern and carry out my higher power's will for me. I'm loved and accepted as I am and learning to provide for myself in healthier ways that reflect that love from a higher power. I choose to call D.A. Deo gracias, Anonymous, and to channel that onto others. Thank you for my life.
Thank you to Kim H. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And thank you for sharing the screen, Ellen. Next up, without further ado, I would like to introduce Sandro. Sandro's home group is the Saturday Writers Prosperity Meeting. Sandro came into DA August 12, 2017, and will share their experience, strength, and hope. I will time you 15 minutes. I'll give you a 5-minute warning and then a 1-minute warning. Sandro, please.
Hi there. My name is Sandra. I'm a grateful recovering debtor and under earner. And thank you so much for the pleasure and honor to be here today to share my experience, strength, and hope. I will just say that, you know, I so resonated with the last share and with this idea of like scarcity, and everybody is against me, you know? And in that, as an Italian Jewish Brazilian person who has traveled quite extensively in my childhood, there were many, many opportunities for me to see things very differently than what they actually are. Because to me, no matter where I went, I looked different, I sounded different, I was different, and I was never, ever, ever a part of. And I was not good enough to receive. I will also note, just to be current, I celebrated 6 years of solvency on May 20th. That gives you a bit of a date of that. I did have to recount that, right? A number of times I lost my solvency before I could actually really look at what it meant to turn it over to God and make that decision and let go. What does that look like today? Today or yesterday, I received very good news that I am going to be a homeowner, a first-time home buyer in Brooklyn, New York. How did I get here? I fell a lot, a lot. I made many, 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 many mistakes. And I heard that in the last share too, that I learned it's okay. It's okay to make mistakes. It's okay to be a human being. It's okay to not do everything perfectly. And I will also just claim that I have recovery in different rooms. And it took me a few rooms and a number of times doing the 12 steps in different rooms with a sponsor to really look at what it was deeper than all the depth that I was going that allowed me to live in the world with terror and restraint, restriction around money. And so I was very heavily a debtor and an under earner. I lived in a lot of scarcity. I could make a dollar go a long way for a long time. And I was okay with it. I was very okay with it because I lived under the guise that, again, I'm not good enough. I'm not worthy. People like me. And what I mean by people like me is I didn't identify with being a female. I didn't wear high heels. I didn't wear a skirt. I never wore a dress. I just didn't fit. And when I did, I felt extremely uncomfortable. Extremely uncomfortable. I felt like something was wrong with me. And I didn't even know how to talk about it. And I wasn't a boy, but I did play a lot on boys' traveling teams. At 12 years old, I was on a boys' traveling soccer team because I made it. In high school, I played 2 years on the ice hockey team with boys because I went to the student board or the school board. And I advocated for me to be, since I was a figure skater earlier on, and I didn't feel like I related to that, but I wanted to get on the ice. I wanted to play hockey, and they didn't have a girls' team. So I tried out, and I made it on the boys' team, and it was rough. It was really rough, but I also did not relate to being a boy. I couldn't shower in the boys' room. I couldn't hang out with the boys the same way they did. Right. And so I always just felt I'm not a part of. I didn't see any reflections in the world of people like me or even talking about it. I actually saw a lot of shame around it. And so I felt shame. I felt discarded. And that carried on through many, many years. Right. And I, like I shared, I got, I'm in different recovery programs. I got sober. I'm 16 years sober, God willing, this November. And I have a lot of experience in other recovery programs around food and my addiction to food and things like that. So with that, unraveling layers, I discovered even with all the recovery that I was having, there was something underlining this thing that I couldn't understand. I had a job with the Whoosie Whatsies. I was 3 years sober and I worked 85 hours 1 week without complaining. Do you think I got paid for all those hours? No, I didn't. And I was okay with that because that's what I thought I needed to do to make it in the world, was allow people to use those, I would call, not use me, but like to exploit my passion for the work I was doing. Right? To work with people that actually did not care about me or my well-being. They were just like, let's take this kid, and they're willing to go to any lengths for me. And I heard something on the last share about the first line in the spending plan is a spiritual line. Well, I was spending all my time for other people. Other people were my higher power. This idea of fame and whatever it was that I was chasing was that. And it wasn't until I did a thorough fourth step in DA that I could really look at my inventory around the resentment around my mother. My mother worked four jobs, put herself through school, and took care of me and my brother as a single mother. And I had so much resentment towards this woman because I felt neglected, not loved, unworthy. And I walked through the world blaming her for the fact that I was under-earning. And when I looked at that and I saw what was underneath that is my mom would watch TV when she got home. That was how she numbed out. You know, I called it numbed out. And I would say to myself, if only I was on that TV, then she would pay attention to me. Right. Then she would look at me. So everything I did was about running, jumping, skipping and hopping to see if I could get that one shot. And I wasn't looking for anything tangible. So in doing a first step through, you know, obviously I shared about the four step, I was able to say, okay, wait, my life is unmanageable. I'm unmanageable. I'm insane, right? Because the second step implies my insanity, right? Came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity implies that I'm insane. And the insanity of it all is that I am in charge. Yes, there are things that I could do. There are actions I could take. I could read a book. I could take a test and make sure that I'm going to sleep on time to get that done, to be clear and focused. And I got the shingles in college because I stayed up all night. I wanted to get that award, and I did. I won the award for my film. And I had no money. And I was so proud of that too, because all these people were spending $75,000 for their student project. I was like, I didn't have to do that. Look at me. I'm a real debtor under earner. I got this. You'll see. I'll show you. It'll be that glorified story of how I struggled through my life to get to the top. And then, wow. In recovery, there was this beautiful concept. I don't have to struggle. We cease fighting anything and anyone. I'm not perfect at that. Trust me. I argued with my lady friend today about something so not needed. You know, it was just so, anyway, that's for another program. So there's that. I learned I didn't need to struggle. So there we go. 2017. 2018, 19, I'm doing okay. I have this job, that job. And then I'm like, I need to up my program. I'm not doing enough. So I go to a group that's so rigid. I mean, I was like, time, like, let me track my time. Let me track my money. Let me track the breath that I take. Like, it was so intense, right? And I'm at this job, which I thought was great, a great opportunity. And a person in that program who was a very predominant person in that group called me and said, you have to come to this intergroup meeting or you will lose your solvency and the, you know, like this energy. And I was terrified. So I left my job to walk 4 blocks to go to this meeting because I was like, I can make it work. I can fit it in. I got this. I know because I'm a producer and I can schedule like crazy. Well, I went there and 2 weeks later, I lost my job because I was the supervisor and I left. And there were other things, right? So it was that. It was like, wait, I thought I was doing the right thing. And now I'm in this group and I'm doing this, you know, and all that. Well, wait, there's that thing again. It's a spiritual solution.
5 minutes.
Thank you, Kathy. It's a spiritual solution. I was still trying to, whatever. I could do that in program too. And it's a process. You know, someone told me a long time ago that DA is this process of unraveling very slowly. It's a slow program. Wouldn't you know that I'm doing the step work again and I'm working with my sponsor and bing, bing, bing. Why am I running to this meeting? Why am I making sure I'm there so I fit in? So I'm there and everybody loves me. Oh, my mom watched TV because she was tired and that's what she needed. She took away things and gave them to my brother. And I saw that. I'm a woman, I'm a girl, and there's not enough for me. So I have to chase that man that called me to make sure he approves of me. I have to chase that guy and that woman and this person and that person to make me feel like I'm validated. I'm good enough. Because people like me don't belong. I also didn't understand what it meant to have clarity. Right? Like, who am I? People started coming to me like, wait, I heard you're queer? Non-binary? Because I had all this stuff coming up about male, female, energy. You know, I studied Kabbalah here and there. And so I went to therapy, but I had money and I had a health insurance plan suddenly that I didn't have before this program that gave me the opportunity and the availability for that. Right? So I showed up and I started seeking for myself more clarity with higher power of who I am, how I am, and where I belong. And I realized I belong everywhere. All encompassing. Female and masculine energy exist in everyone and everything. There's just a polarity. Some are more this way, some are more that way. And we're all this. So I started to realize that the issue isn't with the outside world. It wasn't with how much I get. And if I get more, then I can become. It was that I needed to have more inside of connectivity, right? More connectivity inside to bring it out and share. I was doing it completely opposite. And that's what the clarity of growing in this program. I'm still making amends. I'm still making financial amends, not to other people, to myself. Today, let's talk about sabotage for a second, especially as a non-binary queer. I'm a first-time homebuyer in Brooklyn. I can't imagine that there are other queer, because I got on these meetings, I'd be like, I'm a queer person. The only thing I can get is maybe a roommate in Brooklyn, somewhere where all the trans queer people live, right? Suddenly, by the grace of this higher power and these meetings and the connectivity of this, you know, community. I've been living in my own apartment and paying my own rent.
1 minute.
Thank you. For 5 years. In a nice apartment that has a gym and laundry and a view at the top and a courtyard. And now I'm going to be a homeowner in a quiet, calm neighborhood with a waterfront and a view of Manhattan. And it's not the Taj Mahal or the Ritz-Carlton, which I thought was like, oh, I'm going to do this thing because that's what it should be like. No, it's like I'm living within my means and my means do not define me. And I wanted to quit my job today. I was going to tear my relationship apart with someone I care about because of sabotage, because I have to be right and everybody's wrong because everything and everyone's been against me since the day I was born, especially my mother. And that's because I took everything personally, because my mom has no tools. She's nasty. She hangs up on me all the time. My dad just died in November and she's like, I don't care. Click. You know, like, it's so not nice, this process of grief with the family that I have. It's just not. It's really hard. It's a really hard time for me. But one thing I do understand is that I can lean in. I used to have issues with women. I used to have issues with men. And now today, like, I'm able to say to somebody, man or woman or person, whoever you are, I actually need help. I can't do this alone. I'm really bad at it, actually. Like, I'm not good at life without help. I'm not. I don't know why. But I'm just not good at it. So I need help. I'm really grateful to be here. I will say this quickly because it's really important to me around clarification. And many people may not understand what I'm saying or identify with it. And I'm not trying to say anything or be on a hilltop. Take what you leave and leave the rest. I am a non-binary, queer, trans masculine person that lives with solvency today. When I go to a hospital, I identify as a female because biologically I am a female. I am a woman. I will always be a woman. And socially, I offer that I am that non-binary, queer identified person because socially I don't interact the same way as a hetero cisgendered female. Same goes for hetero cisgendered men. And so I just wanted to clarify that because it's very important to me, especially today in this life. It's not about labels. It's just about a gentle reminder that we're all doing the best that we can, right? And some people just don't understand. And I've just seen so many arguments, like visceral arguments with people about overstepping and saying the wrong thing. You know, it's okay. We'll get through it. So thank you again. And I'm so grateful for you.
Sandro, thank you so, so much. And congratulations, new homeowner. Very exciting. Very, very exciting. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. We do know that you have, leave. So thank you. Thank you for creating this time in your day. And the purpose of our webinar certainly is for our motion, the motion that's going to be on the floor at the World Service Conference, requesting a pamphlet for Voices of Women in Debtors Anonymous. Okay, so our next speaker, Nina is our next speaker. Nina's home group is Park Slope Tools Online. And Nina came into Debtors Anonymous in 2021. And Nina will be sharing her experience, strength, and hope on being an older person in Debtors Anonymous. So Nina, please join us. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much, Kathy. And thanks to people who have shared already. It's been really wonderful to hear people share. And I am a person with little confidence about speaking a la carte, as it were, speaking off the cuff. So I may be using a little bit of notes here to remind myself about what I want to say. But I think I want to start by telling you that I learned how to be a debtor and an overspender from my mom. And the way that that happened was that our dad died when I was 10 years old. And my mom overcompensated. she did everything she could to be both mom and dad. And so among those things she did in my life were she, when she took me shopping for school clothes, she'd buy me, she'd say, you can have three skirts this fall. And I'd try on all the skirts and I'd say, well, I really like all six of them. And she'd say, well, that's fine. You can have all six of them. And also when she took us out to restaurants, because she was a working mom, obviously not having a spouse anymore. And she took us out to restaurants on her payday. And she would say, you can have whatever you want in the menu. And I would pick the most expensive thing I could pick. And she was fine with that. I did learn the overspending from my mom. And I took it right with me into my ongoing life. I wanted to say that I began debting when I was overspending above my income. And I was underpaid as a woman in my work life, as a teacher, and as a minister. As in every part of my work life, I was afraid to ask for what I needed, because I had learned that I didn't get good responses because women were really not respected for getting enough money for what they needed. My sister, who was just only 3 years younger than me, suggested I get a credit card. So I said, I don't think I'll be able to. I don't think I have good credit. She said, well, try one. So I tried, what did I start with? I tried Capital One, and I got $100 in credit. And then I tried Capital One again, and I got $500 in credit. And then I tried Capital One again, and I got $1,000 in credit. And then I went to Discover Card. I went to Bank of America Card, the Chase Bank, Citibank, Synchrony, where I got furniture that I needed. And I bought furniture on that credit. And then I went what I thought was the ultimate in American Express card. I thought, oh, now I'm something. Now I'm really something, you know. I was trying to feel like I was worth something. So I made minimum payments. And I was doing fine making minimum payments. And I thought I was doing okay. But then I couldn't afford the minimum payments anymore. And so I started paying more than the minimum payments, which made the interest go up and my payments go up. And so I was debting more and therefore not having enough to live on. So then I debt even more to be able to live on my income, so-called income. So I, let's see. After even that happened, that was going on through my whole work life. I was buying things that I really didn't need. I bought more books than I could possibly read. They'd be on the shelf. I'd read a little bit of them because I was a minister and I had to read certain things for ministry, but I just mostly wouldn't read any of them. And so when I finally moved here and had to give up all those books, I had thousands of books I gave away. When I went out to restaurants and I took congregants out to restaurants because it was my business to take them out to restaurants. So I would take them to expensive restaurants. And also I would give my daughter money and take her places and I would give my granddaughter, I gave money for graduation and for her college education. And I paid money to politicians because I thought they had the values that I believed in it. And I thought that I had to make sure they got elected, which is all about ego. And sorry for the cough drop. I was having to speak with a cough drop because I was coughing. I thought, oh, my turn to speak and I'm coughing. Good job. So anyway, let's see. So this was going on even into retirement. And my daughter one day took me out to a, we actually went down to South Carolina to a beach, and she paid for the place that we would stay at. I was going to preach at a church there. And she said, will you take me out, Mom, to dinner? Because I always did. Whenever we went anywhere, I always took her out to dinner. And I said, I can't, honey. She said, what do you mean you can't? I said, well, I just can't. I don't have the money. How come you don't have the money? I said, well, I'm in some debt. She said, how much debt are you in? I said, I have no idea how much debt I'm in, because, of course, vagueness, denial. And so she said, well, find out how much debt you're in. So I went researching to find out how much debt I was in, and I discovered I had $56,000 of credit card debt. And my daughter said to me, Mom, you've got two choices here. You can either go bankrupt or you can go to Debtors Anonymous. So I said, well, I don't want to go bankrupt. I want to pay the money back. She said, Mom, you're 79, 78, whatever years old. You're not going to be able to pay them back. So I said, okay, I'll go bankrupt. And it took me from, I think, November of the previous year, and then into the next year, June, before I got accepted into Chapter 13 bankruptcy. And Chapter 13 bankruptcy is where you don't have to pay at all, but you pay a certain amount. And at the end of 5 years, your debt is released. So that's what I did. And this past April, my debt was released. So I was so grateful to have been able to stick with that payment plan the whole time as part of my spending plan. The other thing that I did was I joined Debtors Anonymous in January 6th of 2021, and I became solvent in January 6th in 2021, I became solvent in April of 2021. So I'm also like 5 years of solvency. And I was able to get to the World Service Conference in 2023 and also in 2025. And I'm part of this underserved and underrepresented outreach committee, which is involved in hosting this. And I'm so grateful to them. Let's see. What I want to talk next. So my life in DEA. How was I recovering? I went to my first meeting, a newcomers meeting in January 2021, and I learned about other meetings. Somebody from the California group that I go to now, Deborah, was part of the meeting there. She wasn't a newcomer, but the person who was running the meeting said, we're going to have people paired up after the meeting, like parking lot. And so I said, okay. And I got paired up with Deborah. And Deborah said, you really ought to try Wake Up You Debtors in California. So I tried Wake Up You Debtors in California, and they read a reading that I had not heard anywhere else in any of my meetings so far, which was the signs of a compulsive debting. And I listened to the signs of compulsive debting, and I said to myself, wow, 11 of those 12 are true of me. I must be in the right place. And then I heard a few more shares, and I went, oh, 12 of them are true of me. I am definitely in the right place. And so I made a commitment to Debtors Anonymous, and I made a commitment that no matter what, I would stay with Debtors Anonymous. So simultaneously with my bankruptcy life of commitment, I was also committed to Debtors Anonymous. And I started going to meetings. I found a sponsor. I started doing the steps. And the sponsor took me through the steps, which was really wonderful. And I got to step four. And when I got to step four, I realized as I went through the questions in the study guide, oh my gosh, you know, I'm not as good as I thought I was. And I'm not as bad as I thought I was. And I learned that I realized for the first time that I had really hurt my daughter a lot through the ways in which I had been her mother. And I really also hurt myself. And so it was a very important step four was very important for me. I sort of wanted to start making amends, but my sponsor said, hey, you're on step four. You got step 5, 6, 7, and 8 before you get to make amends. So I said, okay, I won't try to make amends, but I did try to do living amends. And they made a difference. They really made a difference. My daughter and I had a really rough relationship all that time. And she started responding positively to my living amends. In fact, she came to an event that I had at one of the churches that I had, and as she walked in, she said to one of the other people in the congregation, my mom just apologized to me. She was so excited. So that was really important. When I got to step six, I realized that God had been with me my whole life. And I had thought God had nothing to do with my money, but I realized that God has everything to do with my money. And so I began to do a ritual where when I would do my numbers. And then I was elected to be the GSR of my home group. And with the help of my home group and scholarship, I was able to go to that service conference in Newark and served on hospital institutions and prisons. And in 2025, I attended the World Service Conference, as I mentioned before, and it joined the underserved and underrepresented. And I'm part now of the housing meeting that's taking place on Wednesday nights. And I'm also part of the housing insecurity subcommittee. So I feel very, very, I feel like I've learned to have more connection with my emotion than I ever had. DA has taught me how to be emotional and how to be aware of my emotions. And I am so grateful for that. And at the Wednesday night event, we also share not only about how we're threatened with housing insecurity, but also about our sources of hope and possibility. I've learned to be more honest about my emotions, and I am challenged physically. So I realize also I need to pay attention to my limitations.
Thank you. 1 minute.
To balance my being and doing, to step back and let others come forward and take on some service responsibilities. One of my groups is the gratitude group. I'm leading that gratitude group right now for 3 months. And that was a challenge, but it's a challenge I was happy to take on. And it reminds me that I am forever grateful for DA. I am determined and inspired not to debt one day at a time. Thank you.
Nina, thank you so, so much. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Okay, so our next, certainly not the, you know, what is it? Our next speaker, without further ado, is Chris. Chris's home group, Chris, let me get your home group, is Solvency First. Solvency First, which meets on Mondays. And Chris came into Debtors Anonymous July 1989. Chris, please share your experience, strength, and hope. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Kathy. I'll make sure that I'm speaking loud enough. There's a little noise going on around here. Maybe I'll get a little closer. I'm Chris. I am a compulsive debtor. Wonderful to be here. Wonderful to hear the previous shares and participate in a worldwide call. I'm going to start with the seven-step prayer that comes from our 12 and 12 and 12. I have it memorized, but I get so nervous. Let's see. God, I stand before you, ready to be... God, I stand ready to carry your message to others. Please remove the fears and the shortcomings standing in my way. Help me be who you would have me be. And it's funny, that's the seven-step prayer. Humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. But to me, that really screams out about carrying the message. You know, God, I stand ready to carry your message to others. So here I am to carry the message and let you know how I came to DA and what it's like now. So my upbringing, I was middle-class family, school teachers, both parents school teachers. Education was very important, that kind of, you know, good family. But there was alcoholism. And with alcoholism, there is a lot of fear. And I just went with the fear. And I see my screens, but you can still hear me, right? Okay. Fear. You know, and fear breeds ego. And this disease is a lot about ego. You know, self-centered fear. And I had it big time. When my father said, hey, if you need a little extra change, no worries, you take it from my change drawer. Oh my God. I was like, you know, he meant a few quarters. I was a very young little girl. And I was cleaning out that drawer. Oh, yeah, cleaning it out. So I could buy sugar, candy for the addiction that I already had to stuff the feelings. And then the debting and, you know, that was right in there also, right away. So I grow up, you know, feeling very entitled, so frightened of life, so scared, not a clue of how scared I am. So you kind of have to puff up and, oh my goodness. Long story short, I made it through college somehow, probably because I spent a year abroad in France. And when, you know, just screwing around, having a ball, not really doing anything but that, when I came back, for some reason, the way the credits transferred, everything worked out. And it looked like I had done way more than I had. It was a miracle. Or was it, you know? Kept scraping by, even though I was just I didn't feel like I was enough. And I was acting out. I didn't even know I didn't feel like I was enough. When it came time to actually work, like, my parents were very clear. They paid for my college and everything, but, like, you get out, we're done. You know, they did. I had to participate in a loan. It was a private school, very nice school. Thanks to my mother, she saw that I couldn't handle a big school. I was clueless, but she saw things that I couldn't see and got me into a little private school, which was more expensive. So I did have this loan that I took out with the help of my father, but they paid the rest. But when school was done, that was it, and I was clueless. I was really clueless. I came to New York because I thought that would be fun. My younger sister was here, and I could stay with her. And I was working. I got like a secretarial job. I lived far out in Jersey, had to commute, binging my brains out. My first program is Overeaters Anonymous, being anorexic, binging, starving. And I was just, you know, it was so miserable. I could barely get up in the morning to get on that train to get to the thing. I was so hungover the night from the night before of binging. And what happened was I met this woman who was doing topless dancing, or not even topless, it was like just dancing in bars in Jersey. I was like, oh my God, tell me how this works. This sounds great. Not having to get up at certain times, not having to have the pair of nylons without the runs in them. Oh my God, you know, the clean blouse, the suit, you know. And she showed me the ropes. And next thing I know, it's like, go topless, go to Manhattan. Let's make this even easier. I'm always about what could be easier, at least at back then. What could be easier? I don't blame this on any kind of woman thing. This is like, I want an easy way out. Now, below that is, I'm not enough. But the surface is just, give me an easy way out. Long story short, that went downhill and into prostitution. I worked in a house in Manhattan. And then I had a horrible asthma attack, ended up in three different emergency rooms in one 24-hour period, lying to each of them, but getting pumped up with whatever I needed, going back out and binging on my crazy stuff. And after that, I found this bookstore, a 12-step, you know, recovery bookstore. And I saw books about my eating disorder, which I never knew about. And I was introduced to my first program. That was 1988 in July. And in that program, like Debtors Anonymous, they didn't have a whole lot of literature. So I was reading the Alcoholics Anonymous 12 and 12, 12 Steps, 12 Traditions, and the Big Book of AA, both of which I have sitting here with me, because today I still read them and use them. In fact, right now I read every day page 84 in the Big Book to the end of that chapter and then start working with others. I just start a little bit of that because I have to be reminded every day I am a true addict for sure. So I'm working in this place. I find OA. I start going to OA. Within a couple of weeks, I go to work, you know, one day, and I'm late. And the manager, John, whatever you want to call him, of the house says, you know, what's this about? Because the fines were quite high if you were late. And for some reason, I just said, well, I was at an OA meeting. And without skipping a beat, he said, and I remember, I'm not just like overweight, typical Overeaters Anonymous person. I'm anorexic. So a lot of people, especially back then, were clueless about that a skinny person could belong to OA. Without skipping a beat, he said, how's your program going? And I said, oh, I'm new. I guess it's okay. He goes, okay, no, fine. You know, get to work. I then knew God is everywhere. God is everywhere. This person, I find out later, had a brother who was obese, and he was trying to help him with OA. God is everywhere. And that felt very empowering in this program because I had already had, where's my 12 and 12? I had already been reading the 12 and 12, and it was speaking to me on a level that I've been seeking for a spiritual solution for so long, not even knowing. I didn't even know I had an eating disorder until I went in that 12-step bookshop and saw books on, you know, anorexia, feeding the empty heart, you know, things like that. But this material fed me on such a deep level, and I related to the addict stories in here so much. I knew this thing was for me. And after that thing of being late, I mean, it was like maybe a couple weeks later, I was out of the sex completely. Prostitution, any dancing, nothing. It like a skin off a snake. That was the power of the 12 steps for me. And no one even said anything like, no one, at that point, I didn't have like PRGs. I don't think I had a sponsor in a way. I was still so scared about sponsorship. It was just the power of love. So I'm a good girl. I mean, when I'm not, I'm swinging one way or the other. When I'm not, you know, then I'm a good girl. But basically my family, the good girl syndrome. And, you know, I heard that you weren't not supposed to start a second program until a year has been up. So I waited a year. and then ran to Debtors Anonymous, where I had heard about from my first program. And in DA, I stepped into my first meeting, and I saw men. Because OA was like, I don't know, 99.9% women, especially at that time. I saw men, and I was like, oh God, this is a grown-up. My first thought, this is for grown-ups. This is like the real thing, like the whole, the full thing, you know.
5 minutes?
Left, or I was speaking for five?
Left. Okay. 5 minutes left.
So I'll speed up. And I have never felt the equanimity, the equality of genders like I have felt in Debtors Anonymous. To me, it has been a perfect growing ground. I grew up, I had pressure people who taught me that I needed a job. They taught me how to get a job. They taught me what jobs to say yes to and what no to. And when I didn't agree with them one time, I went to the bathroom at the temp job I was in. I got on my knees just thinking, I'm going to do the DA thing. I'm going to even be dramatic, get on my knees and pray about it. And it was like something hit me on the head. It was so clear as day, you're taking that temp to perm job. Yeah, yeah, the corporate thing that you don't think you're going to do, you don't want it. Yeah, you're taking it. Like, that's how clear it was. PRGs are really the way I recovered, because I was really too frightened. I couldn't get that close to people. I couldn't, the sponsorship thing, it was too, like I see now, I didn't even maybe love myself enough. But the PRGs I could do, because there was three of us, and, you know, and the PRGs guided me in a way that are just astounding. When it was time to move from Brooklyn, I wanted to move to Westchester, and for certain health reasons and peace of mind, and, you know, I was like, how is this ever going to happen? I was actually quite chronic fatigue, sick at the time. I couldn't, like, how am I going to get the subway, let alone the Metro North up to get to where, you know? And my PRG guy said, just go find meetings up there. He goes, first of all, come to our meeting in Croton, you know? And then, and I found like an OA half-day event, you know, in Scarsdale and a few things like that. That was manageable. You know, that made it possible. And I went to this one meeting and a woman came marching up to me. I don't know why. I didn't say anything about moving or that it would be difficult or anything. I just said, oh, I think I might move up here. And she marched up to me and stared me in the face and said, do not let anyone tell you that this is impossible. It's very possible, and you can do it. I mean, that was just God, you know. And shortly after that, I made my move up to Westchester. Let me make sure I share about, long story short, I stayed with the job that the PRG people recommended. I did the 401k to the max amount as they recommended. And at the age of 62 and a half, I was able to retire with a decent amount in my 401k and also a relative who passed away. There was some inheritance there. But even that inheritance, there was funky alcoholism stuff in my family. And it really wasn't clear that that would come through and that would be, you know, happen the way I thought it should. And all my DA people said, don't do anything. Don't get into your DA program. And at that time, someone asked me to chair a fellowship day at the World Service Conference in what, 2020 or 2021, when it was in Newark. Actually, I did it both years. I think I did the online one and the year after in person. And I did it because I needed to grip. I needed to grab and grip on this program. I needed to be in this program. That poolside stuff, unfortunately, from what I've seen, it doesn't work so well. You know, and someone said recently, if you're on a, you know, a submarine, do you want to be inside the submarine or you want to just sit on top of it when things go down? You know, I want to be inside the submarine. Mm-hmm. And so that's how I do my program. And
1 minute.
Thanks. Thank you. And for today, I just want to say that I, you know, being retired and having PRG people who always encourage me to do my music, my art, I had some skills when I retired, and I was actually got into a professional orchestra. And this last year showing up to this professional orchestra, it almost killed me. Because, I mean, fantastic, but it almost killed me. And my chronic fatigue stuff got worse. because I think I'm just not getting enough help. Like, God's going to have to really be on this. God, you guys, help. Four-letter word, help. Four-letter word. It's still a four-letter word for me after all these years, but I need it. The last thing I'll say very quickly is being so energized and excited by DA's 50th. That was so energizing, exciting. I need that. I need to be energized and excited by this program. They mentioned going to the intergroup, the European intergroup. It was happening like the next Tuesday. I ran to that intergroup meeting. I was excited. I have the aspirations to start a meeting in another language in a country that doesn't have any yet, connected to, you know, where I worked in a Finnish bank. You know, I need to be energized by my service and connection with you all. And thank you for letting me share.
Chris, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. It's wonderful to hear you. Okay, so we have, we are going to take a moment. And again, thank you to Kim, to Sandro, to Nina, to Chris. Thank you so much for being here today on this webinar, sharing your experience, strength, and hope. We are going to take a moment just to practice our seventh tradition. Ellen will perhaps put that screen up for just a moment. As we continue our webinar, this is a seventh tradition reminder to support this gathering and DA's message of recovery. If you could, donate to debtorsanonymous.org/contribution. And if you are in a country where international contributions are prohibited by local law or economic sanction, please consider supporting the growth of DA in your own country.